Welcome back to the show, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Thursday. Squeaking my way through the show today. Apologize for the voice. A little croaky this morning. It's just that, it's that typical winter cold that seems to come around once or twice every couple of years. And thanks to probably some playing on the floor with the cars, with the grandkids, and reading bedtime stories, both of them a little bit sniffly, I've seemed to pick that up as well. But nonetheless, glad to be here with you. You know, I love to, every once in a while, we'll have an opportunity to have someone on the show who just right away is someone that I think, oh my gosh, this is a great person to be able to connect with. And when we were chatting a couple of weeks ago about the possibility of getting David Chilton on the show, I was pumped and excited. David Chilton, of course, a former Dragon off of Dragon's Den, also the author of The Wealthy Barber. And I told my story on Tuesday about me packing up my car, moving away from home, heading off to, well, at that time I was going to broadcasting college. I had my clothes packed in my car. Of course, everything you need when you're moving away from home for the first time. And my dad handed me a book on The Wealthy Barber. And this book, by the way, was brand new that year as I was moving out, and said, "This is a good book. I've heard people talk about it. I think you should give this book a read." My dad, of course, a farmer, very conservative in his financial views on things. He was not a person who used credit a lot. I mentioned the other day, if he was buying something for the farm, he often would save the money and buy it as opposed to going in and getting a loan or buying it on credit. And so most of the conversations we had around money was you save up and you buy something. But this book, The Wealthy Barber, really talked about strategies and strategies in such a way that is easy for an 18, 19, 20-year-old to comprehend and understand of how to set yourself up for the future. And so I was excited to talk to Dave Chilton. And in fact, that's how I opened up the conversation. I said to Dave, "You must hear stories like mine all the time."
Well, that's been the best part of this is everywhere I go, because people recognize me through seeing the face on Dragon's Den. Everybody comes up and tells you stories about The Wealthy Barber. And a lot of times, in fact, it does involve parents, et cetera. You won't believe how many people have told us that their parents bribed them when they were in their 20s and 30s to read the book. They said, "I'll give you $200 if you read it." Or one fellow said, "I'll take you all to Florida, but you have to read a chapter a day for the 7 days we're there," et cetera. So, yeah, it's great. It seems to pull the generations together. And right now with the updated version out, it's amazing how many times it's parents, 55, 60, 60, buying it for their adult age kids and saying, "Look, here's a trusted source. The book's entertaining, and give it a read and it'll start you on the right path." So it's the same thing is happening now. It's exciting.
It's a great point, because I just actually grabbed a copy for my daughter. So that is a well taken point. So, I mean, I had The Wealthy Barber growing up. What did you have? Who was the person, or what was the source of inspiration that ultimately led to the writing of this book?
Well, I'm a little embarrassed to admit this, but I was a financial geek from the time of 15 or 16. My grandmother got me hooked on it. My parents weren't into money at all. I loved the math end of it. I loved all of it. And I went straight into finance, economics at university, Canadian securities course, etc. I started teaching teachers financial planning using humor. This was not for them to pass on to their students, but for them to manage their own money more efficiently. I used a lot of humor. I didn't use charts and graphs. I could see the casual delivery style was working, so I started trying to scale it through a book. And the original book was called The Ultimate Guide to Losing Money, where I used a lot of humor to teach all of this. And then one night watching Cheers, I thought, what about a fictional setting? Called it The Wealthy Bartender, but then the alcohol got in the way, and I shifted it over to the barbershop, not knowing what I had. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you. I thought it would sell a few thousand copies. I didn't realize it was going to go on to become the success it did, but it resonated with people. They found it very understandable. And again, the pass on, the word of mouth was the key. Everybody would read it and say, "We should get it at work for the employees, or we should pass it on to our friends," et cetera. And it just took off from there.
I'm holding a copy of your newest book, the upgraded version, but I know over 2 million copies of the original sold in Canada. I'm also chuckling at the quote from your dad on the back of the book. And the quote says, "Over 30 years ago, Marjorie and I told David, you won't be able to just keep milking your one and only good idea forever. Turns out we were were wrong. that's funny. So tell me why do the upgrade? What has changed in this new book from the original version?
You know, a lot, interestingly. In fact, when I set out to write the upgraded version, the updated version, I thought that it would take me 4 to 6 months because you're working from the foundation of the initial effort. It took me 16. It took me longer to write the update than to write the original. Why? Because we have a lot of new products and accounts out there, the TFSA, the First Home Savings Account, wonderful products, by the way, wonderful accounts. Then there's financial products like exchange-traded funds. Those all have to be explained. They have to be explained in a way that doesn't intimidate the reader, that invites them in, that they go, oh yeah, I get it. That takes a lot of testing. And so as I write each chapter, I'm showing it to people in the target audience, garnering their feedback. What did you understand? What examples really clicked with you? What didn't? And then rewriting. And that takes a long, long time. And the other reason I got at it now is it's tougher out there now. I mean, the price of real estate throughout most areas of the country is such that it's pinching people's savings, younger people in their 20s and 30s and early 40s. And also the cost of living in general is up. It's very elevated. I would argue that it's gone up much faster than the reported CPI says it has. And so younger people have every reason to say this is tougher than it was back in 1989 when you first brought the book out. I agree with that. It's simple arithmetic. When you have more going to your fixed costs, more going to your essentials, you have less that you can save. And so trying to help people to manage those challenges, the psychological things are harder too now, of course, with social media and the algorithms targeting us, customized targeting. So all of this adds together and makes it fairly difficult. And then the final reason I did it now, and don't laugh because I'm being quite serious, is I'm old. And if I didn't tackle it now, it wasn't going to happen. You know, I'm 64 and I thought I'd better get at it. My kids are in the target demographic. Their friends are. My friends' kids are. I had a lot of people I could test with. I could take all the questions they've been asking me and weave them into the manuscript. And I have to say I'm thrilled with the way it's going over. My biggest fear was that younger people don't read as many books now. In fact, younger men are reading remarkably few nonfiction books. And I thought that's going to be tough to get past, but so far, so good. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have said, hey, there's a lot of noise out there with TikTok and everything else. This is a trusted source, and they're throwing themselves into it. So I'm thrilled with the feedback so far.
It's a great book. David Chilton is my guest, not only author of The Wealthy Barber, The Wealthy Barber Returns, but former Dragon on Dragon's Den as well. I heard a rumor that part of the reason why it takes you a while to write a book is that you handwrite your books first.
Yeah, I'm embarrassed to admit that. It's funny, by the way, I just got rid of my BlackBerry phone 3 weeks ago. That tells you a little bit about the guy you're dealing with. But I handwrite it all. In fact, this book was written on the exact same card table that I wrote the original on back in 1988. It now has two broken legs. My new puppy, Jasper, knocked it over several times. But I just find I'm more productive, I'm more creative when I use the old-fashioned hand to paper. Somebody joked and said, Dave, you're right out of the 1940s. Well, that's the 1840s. The 1940s, they were at least using typewriters. I'm back to using pen and paper. My editors pull their hair out because they have to, of course, be able to discern what it is I'm trying to say, and I've got strokes through it all because I'm testing and revising. So for other people, it's not a very efficient way to go, but for me, it seems to work.
Who is the target audience? When you were giving a former answer there, you said your target audience. Who would you consider the target audience for The Wealthy Barber?
I find this very interesting. So initially the target audience was people in their 20s, 30s, and early 40s, and still is age-wise. But it was also targeted at people who were really just starting out in terms of knowledge. They didn't know a lot about RSPs versus TFSAs, that type of thing. But what's been great about the book over the last 35 years, and the new book even more so, is that a lot of experienced people, people who are very well acquainted with a lot of these things, are reading it, benefiting from it, getting back to us on it. I cover off a lot of nuances in it and a lot of priorities. One of the things I recognized doing all the testing was, let's not be naive. In these tough times, readers can't do it all. They're not going to max their RSP, max their TFSA, pay their mortgage off early. None of that's happening. So they have to figure out, how do I prioritize? If I can only take one or two steps, which one or two make the most sense in my circumstances? And the book spent a lot of time on that, kept it interesting, kept it flowing. And so a lot of very experienced people in the industry even are getting back to me and saying, I'm using the communication approaches you used. I'm using the examples you used to help out young clients, et cetera. So it seems like the demographic, target demographic, is a little little wider than I thought it would be.
I'm asking a question that maybe is a bit provocative, but I'll ask it on purpose because there's been two people just moments ago that texted into the text line almost identical requests of you. And that is, are there lessons to be learned from your book for government?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, you know, governments throughout the world, democracies, will always spend more than they take in. It's the nature of the beast. I mean, getting reelected is always the priority. But now, in the Western world, including in the United States, maybe even primarily in the States, we've gone too far. And we are in a debt trap right now that's going to be very difficult to extricate ourselves from. And money is finite. Whether you're at the government level or at the household level, yes, governments have the ability to print money. But remember, that leads to inflation, and that creates its own set of problems. So yes, I definitely think there's some common sense lessons in the book that government officials should be grabbing a hold of, and better throughout the Western world soon, because again, this debt problem is getting to the point of tipping over where we're going to get past the point where there are solutions.
Let me ask this question, and we're almost at the end of our time. And by the way, we are going to give away, we've got three copies of your book here. We're going to give away momentarily on the text line. I'll explain that in a second. But what would you say, Dave, is the biggest mistake you see young Canadians make when it comes to their personal finances?
Well, I think there is a little bit of a lack of hope right now, unfortunately, and I think some of that's understandable. When you look at the real estate prices in most areas of the country, they seem out of reach to normal income Canadians, especially if you happen to stay single. The second mistake, and that is a mistake, by the way, because there are still things you can do that can advance the ball and put you in a much better financial position. I understand it's tougher, but again, the book does not gloss over that. In no way, shape, or form does the book say, oh, it's always been tough, and stop complaining. It's not like that at all. I agree that basic arithmetic is challenging. Don't lose hope. And the biggest message I would say to people when you talk about mistakes is, a lot of people think, I can't understand this. I'm not good at math. I'm not good at personal finance. Trust me, the tricky stuff doesn't work. The good, straightforward things that the Wealthy Barber teaches, everybody can understand. The narrator starts out by saying, I stink at math. I hate personal finance. You can learn along with the narrator and the other characters. I trust me, there's nothing in the book that you will not understand. It's all relatively straightforward.
Great conversation with David Chilton the other day, former Dragon on Dragon's Den, the author of The Wealthy Barber and The Wealthy Barber Returns. And I was shocked. I mean, Adam and I were both chuckling because we did a book giveaway. We had three books to give away, and we got hundreds of texts within about a 3 to 4 minute time span of people. So congrats to those that won the books from The Wealthy Barber. And of course, that revised version is out in stores. Now, you're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. The conversation we started right off the start of the show this morning after we had our chat with Tasha Carradine from the National Post around the Conservative Leadership Convention, the leadership review that will be happening for the Conservatives, and whether or not you see any challengers step forward, whether or not Pierre Poilievre adjusts anything after that, is still sparking conversation on the text line. Jim and Davidson, if you're a true Conservative supporter, you believe in Pierre Poilievre. He is doing his job as the opposition. Those who oppose him would have you believe he's the wrong guy for the job. Of course, they don't believe in the Conservative Party platform or values. How would they know what kind of leader that he would be, given they've never given him a chance? Jack, on the other hand, Jack in Willowbunch says, I believe if Pierre stays, there will be more floor crossing. I think there will be a split in the party. Progressive conservatives like myself can no longer stay and try to reason with this hard right-wing group. Jack in Willowbunch. Got a text from Kevin in Lorley saying, you know, you're probably correct. Pierre Poilievre will still be the leader after the leadership review. As you said, the majority of rank-and-file hardcore party supporters will support his approach. What could change that is, especially if a couple more defections happened, potential candidates and elected MPs will realize their own chances of election or re-election are in jeopardy under his leadership. There could be an internal revolt. thanks to all of the texts that we've got, and appreciate everyone weighing in on that conversation. Okay, we are going to take our break at the top of the hour here. Coming up after 11 o'clock, we've got our guests from Vinyl Diner Records back in. We've had them on the show before. These two, Darren O'Grady and Darren McKay, both are owners of Vinyl Diner Records, and records are continuing to climb in popularity. There are a number of people that will find vinyl records, maybe even a record player, under the Christmas tree this year. Why is that? Why are vinyl records making such a resurgence? We'll talk everything to do with vinyl. In fact, we'll open up the phone lines. If you have questions for these two, we'd be happy to take your questions as well. 1-877-332-8255. We'll be right back here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.